takaisin kirjoituspöydälle. Mä oon Henkka Lehto. Mulla oli tänään vieraana Jane McDonald. Me keskusteltiin komiikan kirjoittamisessa sellaisesta näkökulmasta kuin toiseus. Tuolla aiemmassa jaksossa Lindströmin Jukan kanssa sitä kosketettiin, mutta se ei välttämättä ollut ihan yhtä vakuuttavaa kuin kaksi reilua 30 siisteissä sisätöissä olevaa heteromiestä keskustelee aiheesta, että millaista se on sellainen, kun on toisten silmissä ihan toinen. Ja peilattiin hyvin vähän omaa komiikkamme siihen, mutta Jim McDonaldin komiikassa kantava teema tällä hetkellä on nimenomaan tämä toiseus, ja kuunnellaan, mitä Jamilla oli sanottavana.
Cool. My name is Jamie McDonald. I'm a half Finnish Canadian living in Helsinki. I've been living here for 12 years. And I've been doing comedy on stages here for maybe 2 years, 2.5, something like that. I haven't been counting so much. And lately, I guess, lately all of my comedy has been focusing on my gender transition, because I've been transitioning gender in the last year or so, and medically for about 4 months. So I get a lot of, that's where all my material comes from now, and that's kind of like, that's also how people kind of recognize me nowadays. Like, oh yeah, the trans community.
Yeah. In a previous podcast of mine, I was talking with Jukka Lindström about otherness, and we had a lengthy discussion about otherness, but like two straight guys from Helsinki working in proper indoor jobs, got master's degrees and so on, yeah, we're talking about otherness. Yeah. So I thought that the otherness might be a good team for this one, and you know about otherness because you're obviously Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, actually, when you it has been something that's come to my attention, like I'm a foreigner living here, and then being a trans person is one thing, but also being like now a gay person, because I'm like a gay trans man, so now I'm also learning how to navigate gay spaces. It's a change. It's really different.
And that's something you don't hear too often. And now I'm a gay person.
I know. I couldn't really identify as straight completely beforehand, because I knew I was queer in some way, but it wasn't like, you know, it was like, but I had a female body and I was attracted to men. So it was like, it was really difficult to put a kind of a label on that. But now it's like, yep, I'm gay. And now if I go to a gay bar, it's like a completely different experience. Like I get checked out and I'm like, oh my God, I'm here. Like I'm visible. Like people see me here. It's crazy. I love it, but it has been kind of come to my attention in the last, especially in the last 4 months, just how much you can read about other people's experience, and other like kind of communities, other groups' experience, but until it really starts happening to you, it's really difficult to completely empathize with it and to take it seriously. For instance, like one of the really interesting things that kind of has started to happen is like, I'm not really so afraid of like, if I go out on Friday night and if I see like a bunch of drunk, you know, 20 year olds just hanging out kind of thing, or if I see some people who look a little bit like they're sort of aggressive kind of thing, I do not worry about sexual violence anymore. Not in the same way. Like, I don't have this kind of like, oh, I have to walk home with my keys between my knuckles because I might get raped kind of thing. Now it's like some random guy sees me, doesn't like me, and wants to have a fist fight. That's like in the back of my head now. I'm like, oh my God, women don't know that this is like a thing that you walk around just kind of being aware of. Does anybody want to just take a shot at me for no reason? Whereas like, I think men have this no idea that what it's like to be kind of like objectified, not as a like a fist fight partner, but as a sexual object on in that kind of like sort of random violence way. Well, I mean, at the same time, it's pretty safe in Helsinki. And
yeah,
and I mean, you don't get attacked really, but you get this like idea in your head that like, oh my god, that's what it's like, sort of thing.
Yeah, still it happens. It doesn't happen a lot, but no. still yeah. It happens. Like yeah. The odds are pretty slim, but yeah. Still the fear is there.
Yeah, like yeah, my boyfriend is like, you got to be prepared for like not if it happens, but when it happens. And I mean, we joke about it. He's like, you go high, I go low, and then we both run.
So you got a plan.
Yeah, we do, we do.
You're obviously prepared.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so you mentioned that a lot of your comedy, like almost all of your comedy is these days is influenced yeah. by the trans issues. Yeah. What's your angle like? Because you need to make it accessible to yeah. people who, I'm willing to bet that most people don't even know anybody who's trans.
Yeah, that's the most kind of interesting thing. I kind of have carte blanche. I can say I can completely misrepresent trans people if I want. I can make up a whole mythology. What I tend to do is I'm really talking about my own experience. So almost everything that I say on stage is actually true. And it's maybe embellished slightly or cleaned up slightly to protect the innocent kind of thing. But yeah, it's mostly about what kind of things that that happened to me that are weird, that I then want to bring to people's attention. Because I think what happens is the trans experience is not really well understood if you're not near somebody who's going through it. And in general, most people begin to think about it like, oh, that's gross, or it's perverted some way. And people focus on like the body transition, people focus on the genital surgery, they focus on these things that are like kind of the weirdest and grossest bits in a way. And then when you're going through it, there's a ton of stuff that actually happens that's really like quite mundane or hilarious or just strange, and it's strange to you too. So what I try to do is just bring out my experiences and laugh at myself and then let the audience laugh with me and at me, and that's fine. And I find that after my shows, it's really common that somebody comes up to me and has like, you know, wants to get into a 2-hour discussion about what it's like and ask questions and stuff. And often people will say like, it's really great that you bring this up because I want to ask questions, but I'm afraid of offending somebody. But I put it out there that I'm not easily offended because I'm just, you know, I'm laughing about the shit that happens to me. And,
you're laughing, yeah. You're talking about it with a microphone in your hand and like putting it out in the open.
Exactly.
So if you were easily offended, would you be blasting it out in front of 1,000 people with a 2,000-watt PA?
Like? Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think what the other angle I like to have is that, you know, I'm not an unhappy person. And I'm quite pleased with everything, and it's exciting and new and cool for me. So I think it's nice to hear about like a trans person's story when that story isn't tragic, because that's
exactly.
Usually it's like, oh, I hate myself, and then I fall in love, it doesn't work, and then my surgery's botched, and then I commit suicide. Oh, what a great story, kind of thing. Like that's what we sort of have in movies and stuff like that. And I think it's good to have more people out there who are just like, hey, I'm happier now.
Yeah, usually there's like two different forms of comedy. Either it's a sane person in an insane world, or an insane person in a sane world. And I think, oddly enough, you're playing this sane person in an insane world.
That's completely right. Yes, I'm totally playing it. Like, I'm fine. What the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah. The circumstances are weird, so the world goes insane, and you're just like, okay, let's, like, I'm a person, let's be like persons are, and all of your experience you're describing on stage, they're basically like, okay, it makes sense if you look at it from your point of view, And it makes sense if you look at it from another person's view. Say you discussed the experiences with psychologists who like ask really weird questions. Mm. But then again, if there's something that's really exceptional and you are not used to, you're bound to ask weird questions. But then again, from your perspective, you're like, okay, I'm a person. And then they're like, okay, are you insane? Are you hearing voices?
Exactly.
What?
I know. It's really true. Like they did, I had many questionnaires to fill out, like the things like, you know, do you ever hear voices? I think they actually even asked me like point blank, like, and you never hear voices or anything like that in your head? And I was like, no.
No, I mean, no, should I?
I know, like, is that normal? Does it count if it's my own voice? Like, I literally don't know what you're talking about. And at the same time, too, the more I think about it, it's like, well, you know, if somebody is schizophrenic and transgender, like, shouldn't they get treatment for both anyway? Yeah. So, you know, it's not like one cancels out the other. So, it's a bit like, it's seen as a pathology in general. But when you live with that pathology and it actually doesn't feel pathological, then it's really kind of, it's fun to see, like, how people like freak out because something weird is happening to you, but it doesn't feel weird to be in it. It's funny because the changes are weird and because society gets weird the longer you stay in it, but it just feels like your normal self in a way.
Yeah, but then again, there's something that like everybody can relate to, because once every while we're the like sane person in the insane world. For example, if you get a vasectomy, you get asked the same questions. The doctor asks you whether you're insane or not, and do you understand what you're doing? Like just making sure that, no, I'm just getting stabbed in the balls for fun. And if you look at those questions from the same perspective, like, for you, it's obvious, but the doctor has to go through the motions.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true too. Yeah, sometimes they would ask things and they would be slightly embarrassed about the fact that they had to ask them.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the form.
Yes, they're like, we have to ask this because it's in the medical practice, it's in the standards of practice, and we have to go through this. But you know, we won't like, we'll just get through this really quickly and painlessly for everybody. It's embarrassing for everybody involved. Yeah, those are fun.
Apart from trans issues, what are your other favorite subjects?
I would say, one thing I really try to do is kind of, I'm constantly looking for things that where we're catching ourselves up as human beings. Like, I consider myself a pretty clever person. I usually consider my audience as pretty clever people. And one of my kind of favorite pet peeves, or my favorite features, it's not a bug, it's a feature of clever people, is that we're not really as smart as we think we are, and we are subject to all kinds of like cognitive biases and assumptions and lazy thinking all the time. And I really like to bring these up as much as I can to find them, because I think that's important that we kind of learn how to not be too self-important about our own politics or the way that we think when we ourselves are constantly making up lies to ourselves to justify things that we do. That doesn't sound really like that doesn't really sound very coherent kind of thing, but it's like it's sort
in,
of
in my opinion it's a pretty coherent thing. That's basically what, say, Bill Hicks is playing, or Bill Burr is playing.
Bill Burr does a lot of that. Yeah, he'll set up a certain assumption for a long time, and then he'll just turn it on his head. Or Louis C.K. has that really great, you know, that what was that bit in his thing about people having peanut butter allergies, and then
going, of course, yeah. But
Yeah.
But maybe.
Yeah, this kind of thing, like just catching up the way that people, the way that people think, and that they would like to not acknowledge that they think like that, but then, you know, bring it out in the open. Mm. It gets embarrassing for everybody in the room. I think that's great.
Mm. Clever people see through bullshit, but then again, clever people don't see through their own bullshit.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think it's nice to be able to recognize one's own bullshit. And that you never run out of material with
yeah.
that.
Yeah, once bullshit's over, you're done.
yeah, basically. Well, for instance, like I was talking about the elections the other... It was just last night at Mascot. Mm. And I got into this thing about how, you know, nobody in the room was happy about the elections because they're, you know, it's in Kallio. It's a bunch of... we're in the green-red bubble, I guess, the latte drinking set, and we're supposed to be very leftist and unhappy and progressive people. But then I thought, okay, if I'm actually going to be a good radical, like if I'm going to be a good progressive person, I should never be happy with the outcome of an election for the rest of my life, because by definition, I should be an outlier. I should always be unhappy. Like, it's not the content of the issues. It's the fact that I want to be always on the bleeding edge of them. So, you know, am I really voting about the actual issues at hand, or is it just that I'm a contrarian and I want to like stick it to everybody else?
Yeah, or like if you're happy, isn't that like the end of development? Like
pretty much.
Could you imagine that like five elections later, everybody would be like, okay, we're done. We sorted this one out.
Yeah, we've done it. Yeah, it's done. Now. Yeah.
Good
yeah.
done.
We have a
Check.
Society now.
Politics and society solved.
Yeah, let's move on to space travel now.
Yeah. Okay, next up, let's treat each other as persons and like be kind and stuff like that and not kill the planet.
Why is this a radical idea? Like, seriously, why? It just boggles my mind. It's like, why is that hard for people to get along and not like want to stomp on each other? And he looks next door at Putin and stuff like that. It's like, okay, this is just like, some people are just insane, that's it.
Yeah, then again, why is it like such a radical idea? Like, okay, let's treat people like people.
Yeah. Let's assume that everybody in here has, you know, a will of their own and, you know,
yeah, consciousness
history.
And like opinions which might contradict with yours for like completely valid reasons.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And a lived experience that, you know, might be different from anybody else's in the room. And well, hey, not Yahtzee. It's like, yeah, I think that the definitely the writing for the specific situations and not like not trying to categorize people too lazily. I always, and I can't help it, it's because I'm all like, you know, I'm feminist, I'm minority, all this kind of stuff. But, you know, for somebody will make a joke about like, you know, all men are all women and it's always about something like heterosexual kind of thing. Or I love it when I'm running at a gay cafe. I've run some comedy clubs and people get up and they look up in the audience, they look for like somebody that could say, are you two guys together? And you can see these straight comics get up and they're like, they find a woman and a man in the audience. They go like, are you two together? And we're all looking at them like, do you know where you are? Do you know where you are? And then the worst thing too is like to look at two guys or two women and just say, are you two together? We're like, why are you assuming they're together just because you're in a gay bar? Like you've just made, you can't make assumptions about people in the same, like if you live in this kind of, if you live in the same universe as I do, you just don't make assumptions about people being together based on the norm, because I hang around with too many people who are norm busters. It's just, you just wait for them to make out and then you can know.
Yeah. How on, and people are making wild assumptions. I can't imagine what it's like if you don't have the experience, like, okay, trans guys who are gay are like, let me guess.
that's actually kind of literally the best thing, is watching people short circuit. A bit, yeah. Because they would, you can tell that they would love to make a clever joke about what it's like to be you, and then you can just see them going like, I have no information on this, I have literally no idea. So they just ask, do you like, do you, they do you, so do you like take it up the arse, or have you had the dick yet? And you're just like, they just can't help asking these things. It's, oh my god.
Okay, let's find a common reference point. Like, I'm drawing blanks here.
Yeah. So basically, all I get is fist bumps. People are like, "Hey, dude," and then they fist bump me, and then that's kind of their interaction.
Bro.
Yes, I've had more fist bumps in the last 4 months than I have in the rest of my entire life.
Yeah. Okay. Here's my theory. Like, fist bumps lead to being male leads to increased fist bumps, yeah, which increases your wages, and this is why men make more money than women.
I agree. This seems legit. I haven't got a raise yet, but everybody at my workplace has already joked about me getting a raise. Or this ridiculous thing like actually happened in the second week I was on testosterone, and the printer at work broke down. And I really thought, I went there, I thought, I fixed this, I'll get somebody to help me with it. And then I thought, no, nobody can help you with this printer because you're a man now. You can't ask for help. You can't show any weakness in front of this printer at all. I was conscious of this being a stupid thought. Like, I was conscious of the fact that any guy in the office would ask for help, and they might even, ask me for help. But that I somehow had this really, really strong urge that I could not ask for help. I had to prove something. I had to, show that I could do it for myself. And these really small social...
Well, that's obviously a setup for a joke. Like, it actually happened, and you caught yourself thinking something that didn't make sense, and you acknowledged that.
Exactly. So I'm just on the lookout for that every single day. And it just so happens that most of it happens because of me, because of my transition right now. In general, it happens for lots of other reasons, but anything from just something that happens on the train or whatever, queuing up for the metro, or just when you go to a restaurant and something strange happens, people just act in contradictory ways. I'm just looking for that. But I get a lot of it now because of the transition, and half of it's from me. And then there's really actually funny stuff. Like, I really did, I wear a prosthetic packer, right? So I have a little silicone dick that goes in the pants and everything. And I did actually leave it at somebody's house.
Which is something that, an experience that I can't relate to.
I know, it's so, I was at work and I was like, well, I'm not wearing it right now. It must be in the bottom of my bag. Get home, it's not in my bag. Oh no, the phone call that you have to have, I think I left my dick at your house. It's really like a unique kind of, it's a really unique phone conversation. I don't think a lot of people have that one.
Yeah, and still, you're the same person in insane world.
Yeah.
Like, you're a sane person reacting like in a sane way that you have forgotten something that's important for you at somebody else's place. But the world's insane.
Yes. Yes.
It just happens to be a dick that you left.
Yeah. Get my King Missile song stuck in my head. I don't know if you know it. This is the song of Detachable Penis. And I always thought it was a really funny song. And now it's like my life come true. It's like, why is this happening to me? Oh my God.
It's not fantasy. It's documentary.
I know. It's dreadful.
You don't need a conscious decision to like, okay, now I'm going to talk about trans issues. Because like, this is your life. And And this everything you see around you is the world. Yeah. That's far more comedy.
And actually, I really did consider that I would take a break for maybe a year or 18 months and then just appear again on the stage as a dude and not acknowledge it, because I thought, okay, this is also my life and it's my private life and I don't know how much of it I want visible and dragged up and people asking questions all the time. And also I was aware that, okay, this will make me into the transgender comedian. And it means that I will be using that material for a long time and my friends will get really sick of it, etc. And yeah. So I was kind of hesitant at first. But then I decided, actually, what's more important is that I do use my powers for good, and it is really good material. It works really well, and And also because, like, when I transitioned, when I came out to my parents, which was the hardest part, actually, of the whole process, was coming out to them. My siblings are fine. My friends are fine. It's my parents who are...
And talking to, like, thousands of strangers about it. That's fine.
Absolutely fine. But it's the parents. It's like, okay, what's... How is this going to go? Like, because of course they'll blame themselves and have all these thoughts, and it will be something that happens to them too, not just something that happens to me. So they're going to go through a period where they're not happy about, or they're questioning about it. So, but when I finally got up the nerve to tell my dad and my stepmother, it turned out that a friend of the family had a kid who transitioned around the age of 20 from female to male, and they had gone through the process, like, by proxy, and seen how this kid just sort of became his usual self, became happier, just kind of, it seemed really natural and normal, and it turned out not to be freaky and weird. It just turned out to be their thing. And so they were really excited to talk to me about it. They were like, oh, that's great, it's you too, kind of thing. And I was like, oh my God, I was expecting to get, like, thrown out of the house and, like, rolled down the street in a trash bin or something like that. Like, I had all this excess adrenaline I didn't know what to do with, because I was ready to fight for my life or just, like, cry or scream. And they were like, oh, that's great. And I was just, freaked out. So, but I really felt a debt to this kid who had transitioned before me and had paved the way for me to not have a horrible time with my family. And I thought, okay, if I can pave the way for somebody else, then that's what I should do.
Yeah, and as far as comedy goes, I think one of the things in this podcast, in the earlier episodes, we've been talking about comedy is a really good tool of revealing bullshit.
Yeah.
And when you reveal bullshit that's like not at all visible for like people like me, I don't get harassed because of my gender, or anything like that. That's just not in my world, so I have no horse in this race. Can you say that in English?
Sort of. Yeah. You just did. So
I did.
Just roll with it. Yeah.
I'm not even sure whether it's a Finnish proverb.
You have cow in the ditch. It's the Finnish one. Yeah. I've got a cow.
Cow in the ditch.
You have a horse in this race. It's the English one. Cow in the ditch is the Finnish one. That's the difference between English and Finnish.
Yeah. The English speaking word is so competitive, and Finns are so agrarian. But our problems are, you know, my cows in the ditch. Anyway, about the structure of Finnish society to the role of comedy, that when you're telling those stories, you're basically seeing the same person in an insane world, and you relate to that because, like, okay, if that would happen to me, is my, like, first question, because I never chose to be a straight guy.
Yeah.
Like, what if my body had said that, okay, my mind is something and my body is something different. How would I react? And it makes you think that, shit, like, that must be weird for you, like, not like, okay, this is a weird guy. No, it must be weird for you.
Yeah, that's, oh my God, like, that's the weird thing. When for instance, a lot of what's happening in, like, in the States and Canada, these transgender bathroom bills, where the idea is, like, that, you know, a trans woman who, you know, maybe has a penis should use the men's toilets, which is completely unsafe and horrible. Like, it's a horrible thing to try and make somebody do, but the people who are fighting for that bill are always arguing that, like, it makes cis women unsafe to have a man in there, or that, like, a man could then just wear a dress and go in a women's toilet for the purposes of, you know, raping somebody. I'm like, that can happen anyway. And B, like, nobody's thinking, they're really thinking from the point of view of, from the perspective of the quote-unquote normal person who has to deal with this abnormal person in their midst and the trauma they get from having to confront something that's abnormal, whereas nobody's thinking about it from the point of view of the person who is different, the abnormal person, who is just trying to have a pee in peace and and really has just wants to get in and out of there as fast as possible with no trauma whatsoever.
Like, we're not going for world peace. We're just... I'm gonna take a leak.
Honestly, I just want to get in there, pee, get out without anything other than that happening to me. And that, like, and it's actually quite. I've just started making the switch over to men's toilets because I'm getting kicked out of women's ones.
Like, really?
Yeah. Women. They're looking at me and they're telling me I don't belong there.
Really?
Like, yeah, they'll say this is the women's toilet, and I'll say I know. but yeah.
Then again, men's toilets are like. This stereotypical woman walks into men's toilets, guys are like, okay.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I just, I go in there, I don't make eye contact with anybody, and I just try to get it done. But yeah, it's a bit like, it is kind of, it's really freaky because you feel like, oh, I'm not supposed to be here. This is a dangerous kind of space for me. So it's quite stressful to go to the toilet just in public, which is really annoying because you have to do that all the time. So I go, usually, if I can, I will always go to the disabled toilet because I'm, I just tell people I'm gender disabled. Which literally feels true because it's like, well, I can't use this toilet and I can't use that toilet, so, I have a disability.
It's kind of stretching the word. Like, somebody's, handicap is that, I can't walk, and your handicap is like, yeah, people are looking at me weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a scale.
Well, okay, if there's somebody in a wheelchair, they can go first.
But lots of things that you said there, that's like obvious material for comedy. Like, you mentioned the guy who had the idea that bathroom etiquette is the key to decreasing rape.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that's gonna keep him. That's societal norm of like men's toilets and women's toilets.
Yeah.
That's the only thing keeping some people from raping.
Yeah, really. And I mean, and a lot of comedy audiences are also willing to hear something that's a little bit different. They're not really expecting everything to be this kind of very throwback conservative kind of knuckle dragging bullshit. They're expecting to be challenged a little bit, I think, which is usually cool.
Yeah, comedy audiences on average are way more liberal than the average guy. So
yeah, definitely.
And I'm playing my writing definitely that way because lots of my stuff is pretty like liberal leaning. It doesn't lean left or right, but it definitely is liberal.
Yeah.
And occasionally I notice when I go somewhere less urban. how should I put it nicely?
Yeah.
Less urban, there's like a bigger percentage of people who are like obviously not liberal. Like that you can see it.
Yeah.
Like okay, I'm jumping to conclusions, but fucking Karjala Lippis.
Definitely. Oh yeah, and those audiences are those audiences have always been fun for me because I've been doing my stuff in English in Finland. So if it's a Friday night out in the sticks somewhere and the night doesn't start until 9, well, most people are already drunk. And all I have to do is get up there and start speaking English. And then somebody will want to demonstrate to me just how well they speak English. Usually this is in the form of a heckle that becomes like, seriously, I've actually been heckled by, excuse me, Celine Dion. And that's the heckle. I mention I'm Canadian and they go, Brian Adams.
Yeah, but then again, that happens elsewhere. When I mention that I'm originally from Tervakoski, it's usually like 5 seconds, and somebody goes Puuhamaa, and nothing else. No, like introduction, not a complete sentence, just like Puuhamaa.
Yes, yes. This Finnish heckle where it's just like they make the connection in their minds and their mouth just lets it out. It's like input output. It's not even really a heckle. It's just a reflex.
Yeah, I used to have this bit that I'm originally from Tervakoski, and I was fishing for that Puuhamaa heckle, which, oddly enough, really came really often. And then I said that, yeah, these days I live in Helsinki. Tuomiokirkko!
But people do that. It's also, that's a weird thing that, like, that's really weird that people are always supposed to laugh at where you're from, no matter where you're from. Like, because if I say I'm from Canada, sometimes people take that as a punchline. And I've had whole audiences like erupt in laughter when I just say I'm from Canada, and they go nuts. And I'm like, it's not even a joke. I haven't even set it up as a joke at all. Like, I know that this is a comedy club.
It's not exactly the weirdest place in the world.
I know. Well,
like the most Scandinavian place outside
of Scandinavia. Aside from maybe Scotland these days, I don't know. But yeah, you could say like, I'm from Australia, and people will want to make fun of it somehow. Like, you can say you're from anywhere, and that's just one of the formats. It's like,
from like 3 blocks away. Fuck 3 blocks away.
Yeah. Fuck that block.
it's always been that block, you know.
That block in particular.
Yeah. Comedy audiences are pretty liberal, and comedians on average, there are like many exceptions, but like the usual norm is that comedians are pretty liberal. You also came out to the comedian community like beginning of this year, if I remember correctly. What's the reception in comedy circles?
It was super good. It was really, really good, actually. People were just like, all right, bro. The banter got different really fast, yeah. Yeah, especially with the younger guys. It was like, all of a sudden I'm hearing about sexual exploits all the time. I'm like, fuck. I mean, I know you're sort of, because you can sort of see what's happening. It's like people are trying to sort of like socially negotiate how to talk to this person now that this is happening. But then again, I'm a gay dude, so I can be really crass about it. I can be really sexual and it's okay too, because that's somehow all right. So
yeah, not threatening at all.
Exactly. Non-threatening crass sexuality. I get to play with that a lot, but yeah, in general it was everybody's been pretty much really cool with it. People have like used my new name really quickly. I just remind people if I have my old name on the bill or something like that, I just update it or stuff like that. And it's only taken a few clubs for people to make the pronoun switch and everything like that.
Yeah. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was performing at a club and I read the list of people who were there and headliner was Johanna. I was like, what's the old name still there? And I was like, should I correct them? Like, no, let them be.
Yeah.
Like, he'll handle it.
Yeah.
And then I went there and realized that, oh, hi, Johanna Tohni. Why did I assume that they gotten your name wrong?
I should call Johanna and say, you could consider calling yourself Jamie for a few months and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, that's...
Ollie had a really great thing when Ollie Jahangiri had this really great... When I did my first, like... Hello, I'm Trans kind of gig at might have been a Mascot, but he got up on the stage and this huge rant about now how he gets to say anything he wants. He can be racist, he can be homophobic, he can be anything he wants because he has the Trump card. He's friends with Jamie. He's like, I'm friends with a gay trans man. Fuck you all, I can say anything I want now. I was like, well, yeah, I guess.
For many people, for say most people, it would be exotic.
Yeah.
And I had a really weird bump in. I was in New York and I bumped into I performed at an open mic, and there was this woman named Alison Grillo, who's a transgender comedian, and she's like post-op transgender and very obviously transgender. So you can't like
you can't mistake.
Yeah, you can't mistake. She even on her page says that she's a woman with man hands, and it's really freaking obvious. And after the gig was this really weird situation that she came to me and shook my hand with those man hands. That was like weird. But and she said to me that, oh, it's really nice to have you here because you're so exotic because you're from Scandinavia. And everybody was just nodding. Yeah, that's true. And nobody else saw the fact that, well, in my opinion, you were talking exotic.
Well, no, yeah, because you're the same person in an insane world.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, if we're gonna play like top trumps with who's more exotic right here, I think.
Yeah, people are looking at me at the street and like, oh, there goes this Nordic guy.
Yeah. Well, once you open your mouth, though.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
You have Finnish man face. Yeah.
I've got Finnish man face and got this Finnish accent that I have lost some of it, but lots of it is still remaining.
Yeah. It's always good for a bit of rally English comedy.
Yeah, that's if you play it, you can make the switch from like your normal accent and to the rally accent, and it's really obvious.
Yes.
And you can make fun of Finnish people like abroad like that way, like, okay, first you do your set and then you turn it into this stereotype of a Finnish guy who talks like this and has this and.
It always works really well. I love and hate stereotypes at the same time. Like but then again, I think a lot of comedians work with them really, really well, and a lot of comedians work with them really badly. I think like you can have lots and lots of stereotypes in your act. I think it's really annoying when people are like you can't use any of them, or you have to be really inclusive. Like, you know, you can't ever make generalizations about people in your comedy. I think that's just so limiting. But if somebody's always making generalizations and never questioning it, then I'm really bored with their comedy, because I'm just like, that person's not thinking. And that doesn't endear me to them at all. But if they use stereotypes and lots of generalizations, but then also take a few of them and question them, then I'm okay, so this, the capacity is there and the thought process is there, and you can already, you know, you can start to play with a few of them already.
It's all in the tone, not rather than like the fact that whether you use this or that stereotype, because the latest special of Eliza Schlesinger, I don't even know how to pronounce her name, but Eliza Schlesinger has this special that's over 1 hour long, and the first thing that's not about women and men are different comes after the credits.
Oh my god.
The first thing, every single bit before that is based on like, okay, women are like this, men are like this.
Yeah.
And I think that's really lazy writing.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I don't like that kind of stuff either. Is that when people are talking about, it's just when they obviously haven't kind of, they're making jokes about what things that happened in their lives, and they haven't quite realized that if they thought about things differently, those kinds of things wouldn't happen to them. Like, and they, you know, they're, I don't know, I they get quite a few things like that. Or then when somebody has a persona on stage, I think that's really interesting, because I know a lot of comedians, especially like especially guys who have like a fairly aggressive tone in their comedy, or somebody like Bill Burr really rubbed me the wrong way the first few times I listened to his stuff, because he can be really quite aggressive towards women in his act, and it's only
it's mostly like aggressive against people.
Yeah, but he can be for me at least, what I noticed the most is like when he's aggressive towards people, I don't mind because I'm a person and he's a person and I recognize myself in his experience. When he's aggressive about women, I'm like, you know, you should maybe, you know, think about what you're talking about a little bit. But then, you know, he also, I think he's quite aware of what he's doing, and a lot of it is kind of a persona. And so when somebody has a really aggressive persona, I find it really complicated because they'll come off stage and go like, well, why does everybody think I'm a jerk? It's like, because you're a jerk on stage, you idiot. And, you know, like, but people can see through that as a persona. No, people can't. No, they only see you on stage and that's all they know of you. And trust me, they believe that that is your personality. They're like, well, that's idiotic. Well, welcome to human beings. Come on. I mean,
I used to have a bit like about me having like 3 seconds worth of racist thoughts.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a lot of racist thoughts, but once, like 3 seconds. And I told a story about those 3 seconds and the aftermath. And then I got the feedback that, okay, your set was good, but, you know, you should really drop that racist stuff. That's really racist. Like, I was making fun of me having 3 seconds worth of racist thoughts.
Yeah.
Which I was ashamed in the bit and in real life.
Yeah, yeah. And then people, like, people can think the worst of you really, really quickly. Mm. That's quite surprising. Or like in the Middle Ages, when they only did the only kind of theater that they were allowed to do in the Middle Ages were these religious plays, and they used to do, you know, the crucifixion and stuff like that. And they would do, like, you know, somebody would be playing Satan or Judas, and usually if they would do like an Easter play, the actor who was playing Judas, right after the show would be like given a disguise and taken out of town, because too many times the actor playing Judas would be attacked after the show by the audience. And so they developed this practice of just getting Judas the hell out of town the minute the show ended for his own protection, because people would not separate the character from the actor.
Yeah, I've heard like people playing Hitler getting threats.
Yeah.
Like even when they're portraying Hitler as like, well, Hitler.
Yeah.
And yeah, still getting like, threats like, oh, you're a Nazi and you should die. Like, dude, I was in an anti-Nazi film.
Like, yeah, yeah. It's really strange how, like, when we form an impression about somebody, we tend to look at, like, the face value, or that if you admit that, okay, I have the imagination to play this character and possibly even empathize with this character's motivations on some imaginary level, somehow you're admitting that you basically are that person, and you can also receive the punishment that the other person you're representing deserves. It's unbelievably weird.
That's human nature, and that's what comedy is mostly about.
It's true.
Pretty notable thing recently, you were involved in Think Helsinki Think.
Yeah.
Our last podcast ended with me and Iikka coming to Think Helsinki Think.
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
So, I know what it is, but could you tell our listeners what Think Helsinki Think is and was and will be?
Yes, Think Helsinki Think is a kind of it's a show, but it's also kind of a little movement or a little organization. It's for the promotion. On one hand, it's like for the promotion of rational thought and also rational entertaining thought and scientific thought. And there's a couple of people I know. I used to work with this guy, Marcus Sandelin, who is one of the guys behind it, along with was it Tatu Rintala? Yes. And so Marcus, you know, popped up a while back on Facebook and said, oh, we're thinking of putting together this event. Would you like to host it? I was like, yes, sir, because, I mean, we'd be at the bar, we'd be talking about QI and stuff like that all the time. So he knew I was sort of into this kind of rational scene, if you will. Like, and there's tons of people in all my circles, nerd circles, the IT geek circles, who are, you know, we're all watching British comedy. We're all watching QI and listening to, like, the Infinite Monkey Cage and stuff, and really entertained by science and knowledge and also by clever comedy. And so the idea was that let's do a show where we bring together a bunch of scientific talkers and some comedic talkers and have a night of just good, solid thinking and entertainment with that, and sort of kind of package that up. Mm. And there were these guys who were like, you know, they didn't know that much about making a about producing a show like that. They're not like entertainment producers by any means. They're people who have worked in like consulting and but they knew what they liked and they knew what they wanted and they knew what they wanted to see here, and they were frustrated that nobody else was doing it, so they just went up and did it. And we had a great show with James Randi and Reginald D. Hunter and Tara Shears. It was fantastic stuff. Really, really cool. And there's going to be another one September 4th. Yeah. I think Robin Ince will be there, which is everybody's kind of going, ooh, about that. I'll be there, and I'm just excited.
Yeah, and I was like really excited when you mentioned that, okay, Randy's there. I was like, okay, I'm coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was great.
Yeah. Like he's like 86,
something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, that was apparently one of his last public appearances. He said it would be so. Yeah.
He's giving up already.
Yeah. Whatever. Nobody's claimed $1 million yet. So yeah, I asked him. I said, has anybody asked you whether this $1 million has any interest on it? Or whether, you know, is it subject to inflation kind of thing? He's like, no. Like, because the thing is, you know, if you're going to have interest on it, or then obviously you don't collect it until the very last minute. And or if it's like, you know, an absolute value, like say it's $1 million no matter what. And I can see the future. Now, what if in the future $1 million is actually worth a lot more than it is today because, you know, we have a small apocalypse and the sun goes down? Then I would collect the money then. So I don't think this proves that nobody can see the future.
Then again, like you're referring to the Randy challenge. If you present him with something supernatural,
proof of something supernatural,
you get $1 million like right away.
Yeah.
My thinking is that if you have a provable knowledge of something supernatural, like $1 million, that's peanuts.
That's true. Then you go work on like quarks and the Hadron Collider and stuff like that. Yeah.
Or just like make business of like having the absolute proof of something supernatural.
That's true too.
Like,
but it's amazing he put out that challenge like almost 20 years ago, and still people get. There's something going on Facebook right now about there's this woman who had claimed that she had cured her cancer with this healthy eating regime, made all this money out of, you know, advocating and selling books and stuff like that, and then she turns around and said, "Oh, actually, I never had cancer." Oh, do tell. Yeah. Like, scams left, right, and center.
What's meeting Randy like?
Cool. He's such a gentleman, of course, and he's sharp as a tack.
Well, that's not hard to believe.
Yeah, totally. And just really cool. And also, I just love to listen to the sound of his voice. Like, he has that Canadian-American accent of, like, the generation of my grandfather, basically. So I love the sound of that accent and the way that he speaks. It's great. And it's just he was very, very kind, nice. He was hanging around Helsinki for a few days.
That's seriously cool. How did it feel hosting the whole event?
I was terrified. I was like, I don't know what's gonna happen here, but I really, really enjoyed it. Actually, I had a lot of fun. It's nice when I know that it's kind of like, in a sense, it's my audience because it's the nerds. And at first I was thinking, okay, you know, maybe I won't do any of my own comedy. Maybe I won't, you know, bring up my transgender status because it's really a night about other people. And then just before the show, I thought, fuck it. Actually, if I want to get people to think, I should stick to my guns and I should challenge them a little bit in my own way. So try to make it so that I really, you know, pump up the other performer, the other speakers, and to make it all about having a good, interesting evening, but then also to be able to get to kind of, you know, have a little bit of my own fun with people, I think.
And in my opinion, it turned out way better the way that you took it up, because otherwise it would probably have been like an elephant in the room that nobody mentions.
Yeah.
Like,
is this a guy? Or
yeah, or? Yeah, I get, yeah, but I've had that for so long that it's like it's always been a part of my comedy that you have to explain the weird shit about you when you first go out. At least I find that people will say, like, why do you always say that you're Canadian? Why do you always say that you're transgender or that you're, you know, you're genderqueer or cross-dresser before? And it's like I had to say it because I could see people's eyes glazing over as they're thinking, what is that on stage? And if I explain it immediately at the top of my set, then they're ready to listen. But if I don't explain it, they're not listening to me. They're trying to figure out what I am.
And it's not necessarily even like anything like they're not thinking anything bad. They're like,
no, they're just wondering.
I wonder. And then when you mention, so what else do you got?
Exactly. But I kept finding I had to do that. I had to explain why I'm speaking English and why I dress like I do. And, you know, I could find a lot of different ways to do that, but I had to address it because otherwise it would just be this, until I'm like incredibly famous, it'll be this thing I have to explain every single time.
Yeah, when Eddie Izzard comes to stage wearing a dress, nobody thinks that, what the fuck's going on? Everybody's like, hey, it's Eddie.
But then it occurred to me at one point, I was like, oh God, he probably had to bring it up for years. He probably had to go on every single damn night and explain it. And that must have gotten so annoying, but at the same time, you know, eventually he doesn't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
He likes, he can paint his nails, whatever it comes.
He has his own audience and everybody knows it.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to like set the scene and exactly. You can just go into like, okay, these are my beats.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One thing I've asked every single interviewee here is that what would be the one tip you would give to somebody who's just beginning to write comedy?
Let's see. A tip for somebody beginning to write comedy would be, I think, to write and just keep writing and keep revising and keep looking for... keep returning to the same stuff and keep looking for the points that you can exploit. What I'm actually writing a bit, what usually happens is I write a two-page, you know, text dump of something I think about, and then I shorten that down into one page, and then I shorten that down into half a page, and if I'm lucky there's like two jokes at the end of it. But then you can also expand on it. You can find the places to segue to kind of like open up into something else, etc. You sort of like find all these different configurations with it, and you just have to keep finding your tricks on like how to exploit little twists and how to kind of work technically with it. Joke writing is actually really technical. I noticed that when I listen to, I kind of listen to a lot of stuff like the Now Show and what's the one that, the News Quiz that Sandy Toksvig hosts on BBC with Jeremy Hardy. It's, yeah, that's the News Quiz.
I'm not that familiar with the BBC show.
But it's a radio show.
Oh.
I love radio comedy. It's
okay. Then I'm totally like lost because I don't listen to British radio at all.
Oh, I do it all the time. So I listen to it like every single Friday night. They do one of those like topical news shows, and it's kind of like Have I Got News for You, but just it's a radio show. But you'll notice that like if you listen to it for a long time, you'll notice that there are lots of different formats that jokes can take, and that they usually, the writers will exploit all of them in the show, and they always work. And there's really no shame in writing something that works, that's conventional. Just, you know, you have your own material, you have your own way of doing it. Just, you know, learn all these like small conventions of how to turn a word around, how to turn an idea around.
That's actually true, and I'm kind of surprised that it hasn't been mentioned in the earlier episodes that there are like 10 or 15 like really overused comedic devices. Yeah. Well, overused is the wrong word because they work.
Yeah.
If they wouldn't
exactly.
work,
yeah.
like say like pull back and reveal, and, or
yeah.
like simple misdirection. That okay, we got two things and. And
yeah.
one is this,
and the other one is that. Yeah, and the first one is supposed to be the. You would think it's the obvious description of the first one, but it's actually you're supposed to mix them around when you hear that both of them.
Yeah,
that's all the time. They do that all the time.
Yeah, just yesterday, I was writing about a bit that involve the current government negotiations that Alexander Stubb was talking about, that about trust, that he defined trust that two people are looking each other in the eye and are thinking of ways to get Suomi no soon.
Whoa, that's weird.
And that's an actual quote. then Tuomas, who was riding with me, mentioned that, okay, this is like from 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah. Like, do you just switch Suomi and penis and took a passage out of 50 Shades of Grey? And then I wrote a bit that, okay, this is... there's some differences between like 50 Shades and Grey and this this Sipilä Stubb situation. Other one is like this powerful person exploiting this powerless creature with like sadistic intent, and the other one is 50 Shades of Grey.
Exactly that kind of thing,
which is like if a comedian hears that, like, one is like, okay, where
you
are
going. What's coming. Or like the one that was out, like, there was a couple of months ago, I think the Pope had unfortunately made a comparison of transgender people. He compared transgender people to nuclear weapons, which was crazy.
Which isn't quite obvious.
I know it's not an obvious link, but, you know, stick with him. He's worth. But, I mean, obviously, you know, the first thing, of course, somebody's looking. The minute I heard that, I thought, oh, there has to be something there. And, of course, transgender people are like nuclear weapons. Everybody worries about the ones in Russia. And it's like, I mean, you hear these really incongruous things, and you know, like, there has to be the third one to link them in some way that you can come up with.
And the link is the one that creates the humor, creates the laughter.
Exactly. And that's the practice, I think, that I used to think that everybody possesses the ability to think outside the box, and I still kind of do, but I think a lot of people have let their practice of that grow really weak. Mm. And so I think some people are a little bit more finely attuned to it, but that's basically the whole thing, is learning how to find the unusual connections between things and just exploit them over and over and over again.
The force is strong within the comedians. Okay, I think ending this one on a Star Wars quote.
Yes! I haven't even watched the new trailer yet. I've watched reactions of people watching the new trailer, but I haven't watched the trailer yet.
Oh, that's so like internet culture. Yeah, but hey, thanks a million. This was really interesting, and like I've been trying to find different perspectives, and I think this was the 12th different perspective in the series. So thank you.
Awesome, thanks. It's been really fun. Yeah.
Cool.
Se oli Jamie. Näitä juttuja on aika mukava jutella silloin, kun saa jonkun ihan täysin uuden näkökulman, ja Jamillä taustansa takia niin on aivan eri kulma asioihin, ja se tekee asioista mielenkiintoista. Ja totta kai sekin jeesa, että kun on riittävän terävä, niin on paljon sanottavaa, niin minkä takia mun mielestä hirveän mielenkiintoista haastatella nimenomaan koomikoita, koska yleensä koomikot on sellaisia, jotka osaa puhua asiastaan, koska ne vähän niin kuin maailmalla puhuu siitä omasta asiastaan. Mutta tällainen oli tämä jakso. Seuraavalla kerralla taas jotain aivan erilaista. Tämä oli jakso numero 12, ja ei muuta kuin takaisin kirjoituspöydälle. Mä olin Henkka Lehto, ja löydät muut jaksot ja muut osoitteesta henrylehto.com. Nähdään.